Hey, I found something out this week as well. Did you know the world's largest potato?
Yeah.
You can stay inside it as a hotel.
This is the Living Spit Podcast. Welcome to the Living Spit Podcast. Listen to the Living Spit Podcast. It's on the way.
Hello!
It's been a while, hasn't it?
It's been a while since we said the big hello.
Big hello.
How does it feel?
Feels good.
Yeah,
Stu,
good to be back with the big hello.
I'm just trying to think when the last time we did a proper one of these.
Yeah,
we did
that weird bite-sized one, wasn't it?
In that cafe in London.
It's been a while.
It is. It has been a while.
It was Old Band's New Plans, I think, back in January or February, I think.
Bloody hell.
In my house. But now we're in Howard's house.
Yeah.
And it's lovely.
In my back room.
We're ensconced in his back room.
Very much ensconced. And, no scones, though.
No scones, sadly.
Yeah.
Mrs. Coggins hasn't provided us with some scones this week.
No, no. Has she ever provided us with scones?
No, but I just, in my sort of sexist way, thought she might come and bring us some scones.
Well, it's weird, because I don't know if anybody knows this. My wife, the current Mrs. Coggins, is actually a food teacher.
She is.
She teaches food. And she has a joke that all you have to do as a food teacher is draw scones.
So draw them.
Yeah. That's what you get the kids to do if you can't think of anything else. So you get them to draw some scones.
Wow.
Four different types of scones.
Wow.
So I think she actually does that, but it is a bit of a joke.
A little tip there. If you're looking into going into cooking teaching, just draw some scones.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can I just say, right?
Please
do. It's got to the stage in my life, right, where I'm recording this podcast and you're across the room from me.
Yeah.
Also, I'm trying to look at the running list, which has been carefully prepared by my friend, colleague, and brother-in-law, Stuart McLaughlin.
Hello, that's me.
I've now got to the age where I'm literally going to have to, in order to look at you across the room, I don't need my glasses. And in order to look at the running order, I do need my glasses.
Oh,
so
no.
I am now going to spend the whole of this recording putting my glasses on and off.
So if you put your glasses on and you look at me, am I a blur then to you?
Yeah, well, you're not. You're a blur, but
you can't really
see
me.
It's a bit uncomfortable to look at. So I don't know what I'm going to do, because I've also, and this is letting light in on magic a bit.
Go on.
I'm also got my headphones on because I'm recording this in my little what I laughingly call my home studio. Anyway, this is all very fascinating, I'm sure.
But let's get on with the episode 28 of the Living Spit podcast. Can you believe
it?
Only two away from 30.
Yeah.
And that's maths.
Thanks.
So, we've got a very special episode this week, haven't we?
Because
we're joined by a special guest. We're not alone in this room, dear listener.
He's been very good, though. He's been very quiet.
Respectful.
So far. Yeah.
Hasn't he?
We like that.
We do like that.
Although, I have to say, he likes a chat, so this could be the longest episode of the Living Spit podcast ever. We may just let him go.
Leave the room.
Yeah, leave the room.
Let him do it by
himself. Back in a couple of hours.
We will. Yeah. Who are we talking about, dear listener? Well, we're talking about none other than Clevedon's greatest living film director, Mr. Neil Johnson, who's with us today.
I mean, that it really merits a round of applause.
Let's give one. It's a bit Steve Wright, but we'll do it anyway. Hi, Neil.
Hello. Pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, well, good. I've tentatively called this episode Neil Before Us. What do you think of that?
Well, do you know, that's quite appropriate because recently...
Here we go. Here he goes. Yeah, right, here we go.
I've been having Zoom sessions with a producer in the States, in Florida, and he likes to mention your name all the time. So it's the kind of guy I go, Stu, you know, that's great, Stu. And what would do, Stu?
I keep
calling me Niall, and I've got to the point where, because my name is spelled N-I-A-L-L, which is the original way of spelling Neil.
Is that
and
right?
All other versions of Neil and Nigel and Nigella.
Derivatives
all derived from that.
Wow.
But it used to be pronounced Niall, and I think it got Celticised in Ireland as Niall. But anyway, so there's this guy.
I've said you were right, Celt.
So he keeps going, you know what, Niall, that's great about that. And I've got to the point where I was starting to go, Neil. It's very quiet each time, knowing you wouldn't hear me. Oh, that's great, Niall. Great at it, Neil. So eventually, I now, on the Zoom identity, I put Neil, spelt my way, and then in brackets, the word Neil, K-A-E-L, Johnson.
Yeah.
And the first time he did it, he stopped and he went, oh my God, how long have I been calling it wrong? I said, well, for about the last three or four meetings. He was really apologetic. I keep forgetting now that it's on there. So everyone else I Zoom with is like, are you telling us we got to, like, you know, prostate? No, that's
the other one, the wrong one.
Anyway, so yeah, kneel before is very appropriate because it kind of refers to the Zoom experience that I've had recently.
And unfortunately,
so
that's all we got time for.
Do you want a prostate? And that's the end of it. So actually, my mechanic called me Steve for quite a long time, which was fine because I thought he just got my name wrong. But then he came to one of our shows, didn't he? He came to the Nativity, and we used to, back in the day before we had staff to do this for us, we used to do the turnaround in the interval ourselves, put all the props in the right places. So I was exposed to the public. And he approached at one point. He said, all right, Steve, how's it going? I went, oh, yeah, right, that's fine. He knows I'm Steve. He thinks I'm called Steve. And he said, how's it going down at the garden centre? I went, it's... And I didn't have the energy to, like, tell him not I wasn't this guy. So I just went, yes, going great. You know, got the plants all... And then he said, like, have you been climbing recently? Like, yeah, no, I get up there whenever I can. I'm up those mountains. I'm straight up there. And then I just left it. And then about a year or so later, he said, I'm so sorry. I thought you were someone completely different. And now he calls me Stu. So it's happily ever
after. How long did that go for?
Yeah, it was about a year or so, Yeah. Before he realised. Yeah.
I'm going to say I don't think that's a happy ending. I think the happiest ending would be that he still calls you Steve.
He still
calls you Steve, and he still thinks you go climbing
and
work in the garden.
I'd have really built that character up.
It comes and goes, I'm really sorry about what happened. If you don't want to talk about it, but if you do want to talk about it.
No, I definitely do want to talk about it, I would say, and just sort of feel him out and see if I can talk about it.
Because that thing,
that thing.
How did you cope with that?
Oh, I did. Very difficult.
I'm not surprised because that other guy.
I'm still not over that. Yeah, the other guy.
It's 4 o'clock.
Neil is here. Yeah. And Neil, just remind us, just tell us.
Here we go.
Howard's watch
My watch is going off again. This happened last time. I'll tell you what I'm going
to
do. I'm going to put it down.
Take
it
off. That's one of the ones I listen to.
Yeah. So Neil, tell us, just for the benefit of the listeners who are not aware with your oeuvre, as we all are, what exactly do you do? Why were you talking to that film producer in Florida? What's your job?
I write and direct films.
Wow.
Films. Feature films, proper movies. Not television. It's not a world I have chosen not to get involved in. It's just the way the industry works. So it did for me. So yeah, I have written and directed a number of movies. Started with a film in 90. Well, actually, the very first film I did was a vampire film called Dawn, in sunrise rather than Sharon.
So Neil, unfortunately, didn't get me to do, because we didn't know each other.
Yeah.
The kind of title sequence.
Well, let's hear it now. Had you done it, how would it have sounded?
Dawn.
That's it. Yeah.
What do you think?
Exactly.
I think it's worth a remake. Now that you know Howard, get him involved.
But then, just whizzing through, just so that listeners know, I made a film which was shot here in Clevedon in the mid-90s called The Big Swap, which was about wife swapping. That was a kind of drama. After that, I made a family kind of ghost story called The Ghost of Gravel Lodge. Had Prunella Scales and George Cole in it.
And who else was in that one?
Howard Coggins. Yeah. That's where we met.
Played the ghost, didn't he?
It's not where we met.
No.
We'll talk about that.
We worked together. Yeah, that was 99. I wrote a supernatural thriller called White Noise, which was the thing that got me noticed in the industry. I wrote that in about 2002. It was released in 2005. That had Michael Keaton.
Yeah, I remember seeing that on the side of a bus.
Yeah.
White Noise.
Yeah.
I thought, I must go and see that.
Yeah.
And I didn't, sadly.
No, oh dear.
Okay. I must
catch the DVD.
Beautifully written. Yeah. Terribly directed.
Yeah. That's the one that got me noticed in the industry and got me my agents and managers in LA and all that kind of stuff. And the year that was released in 2005, I had written and literally was directing a black comedy, British comedy called Keeping Mum.
Yes.
Which had Rowan Atkinson, Kristen Scott Thomas, Dame Maggie Smith, and the late, great Patrick Swayze.
Wow.
And since then, I've done a film called Mum's List, which is a true story based on the tragic story of Kate Green and her husband Singe, here in Clevedon, shot here in Clevedon again, and a kind of pseudo-Western in New Zealand called The Stolen, which had Alice Eve and Jack Davenport. So yeah, I make movies. And in between all of those, I've write for, whether it's writing for the studios or writing independent films and film scripts and always the movies.
Wow.
But would you say your best work today, the thing that you're most proud of, is directing, I don't know, some, like, you know, made for internet trailers by two chancers from Clevedon?
Yes. I would. Good. Right. Just a little note. Yes, definitely.
Well, hold that thought, because we're going to get into that in just a bit. But before we do, let's go. Let's have a bit of news. What we've been up to.
Have we got a new? We haven't got a news jingle.
No, but let's make one.
We always do.
News. That was surprisingly good.
Yeah.
So, first of all, the news is that Podbean sent us an email and congratulated us for reaching 3,000 downloads.
That's actually quite scary, good, isn't it?
Do you start getting money for that?
No, sadly not.
That
we still
is
have to
only,
pay them to
that's
do it,
less but. Than 100 per episode.
Yeah.
But it's still, there's 100 people out there.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, we can never quite believe that there's that as many people want to come and see us in theatre.
It's unbelievable.
So, actually,
do you have a total, actually, for how many people have I've seen you. Do you ever tally it up, like,
no,
across all the years?
It would be too many to count. too many.
Literally hundreds and hundreds of thousands.
We don't, no idea. No.
I don't know. I mean, I suppose we play to well, yeah, I don't know. No, I don't
know. Who knows?
Yeah. I'm sorry I asked that question. You can cut that out if you want.
No, we won't. We'll keep it in just to show the,
not,
you know, the
not,
falls.
Not due to editorial reasons, just due to laziness.
We wrote laziness. And also, we were guests on another podcast, weren't we, Howard?
We were, and it was brilliant, actually.
It was
we were on the Good Listening To podcast with our friend Chris Grimes, who does this brilliant kind of sort of I don't know how to describe
it's
it
like
really
Desert Island Discs meets
a kind of mental health thing. But it was really good and really interesting, and we were the first time he's ever done a double act.
Yes.
And it's actually, you can watch it on video as well. He videos it. Yeah. Mm. So he does it so you can sort of watch it as
how
well.
How can
as
you watch it on video?
You can I don't know how you can watch it on video, but you can listen to it on Apple Podcasts.
You can.
Or wherever you get your podcast.
Wherever you get your podcast.
There's
that. Two dogs whining at the door. Yeah. Are we going to hear them
Why are they whining, Stu?
I don't know.
Is it because you brought your dog?
Yeah, I did bring my dog. So they're sort of playing together.
It's fine. I think it adds
to the... Yeah, it does. The homely nature of our podcast. Now, you can also... another bit of news. You can also go to our GoFundMe page, and you can go and fund us.
Yeah.
You can go to GoFundMe.com, I think. Do a search for Living Spit, and if you want to chuck us a bit of money for doing this, then please do.
I mean, hopefully, that out there, there's some kind of... Do you remember in comics, when you were a kid, there would always be some kind of tramp that would end up being an eccentric millionaire?
Yes.
I'm an eccentric millionaire.
Oh,
so hopefully... There's an eccentric millionaire out there who wants to chuck us a load of money for various projects, stroke holidays that we want to have, do.
Now, that would be nice.
You know.
The most regular thing that I saying comics, I remember when I was reading American comics, like Marvel comics and things as a kid, is at the back there was an advert for bodybuilding. Atlas Bodybuilding. And it'd be a character that has the sand kicked in his face and he's all skinny and puny. And then he did some Atlas instruction bodybuilding and he was no longer.
I remember X-ray specs. They were the one. And I remember being about sort of 11 or 12 and thinking, I'd love those because it would enable to me to see through ladies' clothes.
Yes, yes.
But what I didn't think about was the fact that how does the X-ray spec know at what level it's an X-ray?
You might just see their bones.
Exactly,
and their rib cage.
And that wouldn't
That'd
be even slightly erotic.
What you needed was the Grattans and Freeman's catalogue.
Oh yeah, I had them.
Yeah.
I'm back.
I tell you what, the conversation took a bit of a turn.
Did it? Did it take a dive? Did it?
Yeah. What have you done to control the dogs?
I put the dog in the kitchen.
Nice.
Yeah, but I couldn't.
Is that a euphemism?
Yeah, sadly not. I couldn't get your dog in the kitchen, so yours is roaming free out there.
She's pretty good.
She's all right. Mine's the noisy one.
Okay.
Let's have some. Let's kick this off, shall we? With some
comments from the audience.
No, we don't have a jingle for that. We always talk about the fact we don't have a jingle for that.
No, we don't, do we?
You've got many opportunities for jingles that you're not taking advantage of.
You're absolutely right. We need to rethink this whole thing, don't we?
Although, I mean, a sort of slightly slapdash nature
But if you just had a guitar with you...
Oh, no, it's audience questions we've got.
Questions
we've
got, one. Comments we don't.
There we are.
I'll kick off, shall I?
Right, yeah, do it.
Our good old friend David Phillips. Now, he's a long-time contributor to this podcast. In fact, without him, we'd probably have barely any questions at all or audience outreach. So thanks, David. He says, well, it wouldn't be a podcast without me saying something.
That's true.
But I have to admit, since checking on Neil's work, I've somehow missed it all. But there are definitely a couple I'm going to hunt out to see. Well, that's nice, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, there's really nothing you can say to that.
No, I mean, do it, David. Yeah, there's some brilliant ones.
What is interesting about Neil's work is that they're all very, very different.
They're really
different. Nobody can accuse you of being a genre filmmaker.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
But do you know what? It's weird because I suppose starting out in my kind of, I mean, it's what I've always wanted to do ever since being a kind of like about 10 years old, actually. But starting out in this bit of the industry in my mid-20s, back in the kind of like, sort of late 80s, early 90s, it was your dream of that kind of the auteur, the Quentin Tarantino, and actually there's only a few of them. There's M. Night Shyamalan and Quentin Tarantino and those kind of names. But actually it was, I realised the filmmakers that really influenced me, the Francis Ford Coppola in the 70s went from like a gangster film to a comedy to a thriller to war movie, and Nicholas Roeg had a distinctive style but different genres. And there's something wonderful about approaching a different story in a different type of story. You still got your little signature as a filmmaker, but it isn't as obvious as say a Tarantino, and I really love that. And it isn't an intentional thing because there's things that glue them together, weirdly enough, as kind of stories and what they mean to me. But it's lovely finding different stories. So yeah, you definitely, I like the fact that there can't be, I think I would have earned more money if I'd ploughed a furrow. If I ploughed the horror furrow after White Noise, but and actually that I was White Noise was quite a success. It was quite a hit, and I was offered to rewrite or write any horror film that came out in the 3 or 4 years after White Noise. I was offered, but I was literally busy making Keeping Mum, which took like 9-10 months. Mm-hmm. And the thing I learned about my career is when I came out the other end with Keeping Mum, all the executives, mainly in LA, who'd because of White Noise had been offering me horror, kind of went, so what are you then? We thought you were a writer of horror, but you've just directed this black comedy with Rowan Atkinson, so we don't
so they wanted to kind of pigeonhole you and pin you down.
And that's my biggest advice when I go do talks to like emerging screenwriters and things, is let that pigeonhole happen.
Yes,
but you know milk it if you
but
can.
But that's one of the things I think is really interesting about you, is that you are quite a sort of cineast, aren't you? You're a big fan of lots of multi-genres of film, and you love them just as a fan. So when you're making your work, it never feels like drudgery. You never feel like, oh, here I go, I've got to take this money and do this.
No.
You always choose projects that you're passionate about.
Yes, and actually I love filmmaking, and the thing is, it's, and I suppose the type of filmmaking I do, it isn't the auteur kind of art house films. They are a bit more mainstream. Even a film like Mum's List, which is small and independent, you want as wide an audience. So I love the kind of framework and restriction of mainstream filmmaking, because you can still get away with being artistic, but at the same time you've got to not follow the rules in that sense, but you've got to give the audience what they've come for, an experience, whether it's a distressing, sad experience or meant to be happy. I love that mainstream demands.
Which is interesting because we sort of feel the same way, don't we?
Yeah.
We've always said that. We try and do stuff that's kind of not commercial, but sort of wants to please an audience, you know, in whatever they're doing, which is, I think that's why we sort of get along, really, and why we've kind of, when we've needed to film something, we've talked to you about it, which we'll, as again, we'll talk about.
There's such a lot we're going to come on to.
We are,
I mean, this is going to be, and we have got quite a fixed schedule here, but I think we're going to end up kind of
Lots of tangents on this one, I think.
Just to the gentleman who asked that question then, I've forgotten his name.
David Phillips.
Keeping Mum, for instance, is always on Channel 4, or one of its, like, Film 4. They've always renewed. It's great. It's been a very popular film for them, so you'll always find that one way or other. Obviously, you buy them on Amazon and stuff. Mum's List is regularly on the Beeb, which means it's on the iPlayer afterwards for about a year. So they are hunt outable.
Well, there you go, David. Hunt them out, and you'd be wise to, because they are brilliant. The two you mentioned are two of my favourite ones, actually.
But
you've got Mum in the title, interestingly.
I know. I've got the title of another project called Keep Me Posted.
Oh.
So there's a Keep and a Mum. It's very confusing. Keep Mum's List.
I actually genuinely get them mixed up. When you say, I was doing Mum's List, I was thinking, what, that black comedy about?
Yeah, with Rowan Atkinson.
No, about
the other one. Yes, yeah. Next comment.
A comment from Linda Summers.
Hi, Linda.
This is basically blowing smoke up our own ass.
Yeah.
So, saw your recent show, Elizabeth I. It was brilliant. Oh. A tonic. Oh. Loved the pathos too. Thanks.
You're welcome, Linda.
You are very welcome, Linda. And we love the pathos.
Mm. We do. That's why we put it in.
Yeah.
Mm. Thanks, Linda.
Every show you do has got that element of it.
It does.
Whether it's at a sweet, small level or a bigger, more profound level, you do. That's what you do.
We can't keep it out, really. We've got to touch
Adolf
on
Winston,
it.
Just amazing when it comes out. It doesn't come out of nowhere, but it's still a surprise when that pathos moment hits. Yes. Really powerful.
Yeah, well, we're going to be doing that soon. More on that later as well. Mike Winter. Hi, Mike. He says, absolutely brilliant show, Elizabeth I. The songs were hilarious. Look forward to seeing Hitler. Not something you say every day.
No.
He's right there, isn't he? Yeah.
You should be looking forward to it. Well, it's fantastic. Yes.
I'm looking forward to seeing Howard in his Speedos again.
Yeah, well, we were talking about it. We might go for a new set of Speedos. Yeah.
I thought you were going to say nude. We might go for a nude Churchill.
It's not far. Howard did say to me the other day, I'm thinking of, you know that scene at the beginning, where are my Speedos? I said, yeah. He said, I'm thinking of even less material. So he wants to go even more bearing, don't you?
We might try a thong.
Might try a thong.
Look, yes. I don't want people to get overexcited about the idea of that, in case it doesn't happen.
Exactly.
So,
right, let's move on. Let's move on.
Flamenco guitar guy.
Well, hi,
what
flamenco
is your real name,
guy?
Flamenc? saw Virgin on the Ridiculous last night.
Oh, yes.
Amazing.
Oh, yeah. Come on.
Funny and the best night out.
Come on, Flamenco.
Let's be clear about this. Yeah. All those years studying history and now it all makes sense. Don't miss this show.
Well, thanks, Flamenco. I won't, because I'm contractually obliged to not miss any of the shows.
Yeah.
But that's very nice.
Have you got a contract?
No, I haven't actually. No. It's a verbal contract.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I could leave at any time, couldn't I? No one could tie me down.
Right in the middle of this podcast.
Yeah, I could. Well, I did a minute ago, but to put a dog in the kitchen. But thanks, Flamenco Guitar Guy. These are all, of course, based on the fact that we're touring Elizabeth I at the moment. So these are comments that have come in. People have just seen the show and like it.
Yeah, so we like that.
We do. Keep them coming.
I have to say, at the end of every show, we do kind of... we say, oh, look, come to our website, leave a comment on there. We don't get that many, do we?
No, we
don't. Not really. I mean, really, we want, you know, loads of stuff like that.
Yeah.
Basically, because it provides us with material for this podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
So the more you... contribute, the more podcast there will be.
Yes, the more they put it in, the more they get out of it.
Well, exactly.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Yes, Hollywood talking, that is. He's got these little sound bites. So now we're over to you, Neil. We're just talking to you now.
All right.
So
we must.
We've already sort of done that.
Yeah,
we?
We've done the thing. So, it says, I'll ask you the question, and then we'll all agree that we've already answered it. So, Neil, you're a film director. Can you give us a quick rundown of some of your finest celluloidic achievements?
Yeah, I'm quite proud of the
Yeah, I was going to say, the reason I wanted to read it out was... but you've done that.
You've done that. So, let's talk about you working with us.
Yes.
Our association with you goes back a long way.
Yeah.
In fact, you were sort of an integral part of the early days of Living Spit.
Yeah.
So let's go back and rerun the fun with the birth of the mirth.
People ask us, where'd you get your ideas? Well, let us tell you lots of blood, sweat and tears. And I will tell you how we maintain these careers for what it's worth. The birth of the mirth.
Hang on, are we
that jingle there?
I love the jingle. Yeah. But have we never done Rerun the Fun before?
Maybe not.
That's brilliant.
Do you like that one?
Yeah.
Rerun
jingle,
the Fun.
Jingle for that.
Well, we'll see. Don't give us more work.
So Neil, tell us how you first became. I mean, we know.
You became involved
with working with us and what exactly your involvement with.
Can I go further back?
You can go much further back.
Yes, so when I first met Howard, must have been in 1997.
Wow.
Having made the big swap, you, Howard, were the host, the MC of the screening at the Curzon, where it had a one-night screening. And then you asked me to get involved in the Curzon radio.
Well, we used to... So my wife and I and some other lovely people used to run a little radio station from the Heritage Cinema that we have in Clevedon called the Curzon.
Nothing to do with the chain. Completely independent.
No, completely independent. I found out that, as we've discovered today, Neil likes a chat. And I thought it'd be brilliant to have on the radio because literally I don't have to think of anything to do for about an hour. So
I ended up doing a couple of shows. I did film music, which you ran the deck, and I did Bowie, a night of Bowie stuff. This would be in the late 90s.
It was 97, I think.
Yes, yeah, okay, yeah, in that yeah. year. And then, Howard, you were in Ghost of Greville Lodge, which was shot in 1999.
What did you play in that?
I played Durban the gardener.
Yes.
Only one little scene, but...
Yes.
But, all the critics
loved it.
Loved it. They said it was a high point.
You're in a dialogue scene where we had a long tracking shot where you walked with the young guy, and then you're in the fire.
I was in the fire sequence.
But I don't think you had any dialogue.
No dialogue, but
it was all going on behind the eyes.
I mean, to be honest, there was dialogue. I said, look, Neil, I can do it with a look.
And you did.
And I did.
Hunt it out, listeners. The Ghost of the Revel.
Well, you don't need to hunt it out. Literally, every Christmas is on.
So they play it.
And the reason it's on every Christmas is it was a haunted house, traditional haunted house tale, and it was being funded by a TV distributor, a guy called Noel Cronin, who now runs the Talking Pictures TV channel, which everyone raves about, which shows all the old movies, all the black and white movies.
Yes.
And that's him. But back then, he was Dandelion Distribution, and he wanted to completely fund this film. And my wife, Emma, who's a TV production manager, she took some time off and produced it. So we worked on it together, which was really lovely. About maybe 5-6 weeks before the shoot, he said, maybe a bit longer than that, he said, set it at Christmas. Ghost stories set at Christmas will always be on at Christmas. It won't be on any other time of the year, but every Christmas it will be on. So, and that's been true since 1999. It started out on like ITV on Boxing Day, and then it went to kind of Channel 5. Now it's on the kind of Christmas 24,
which
is when they relabel movies 24 to Christmas 24 just for the season. But it's never off the airwaves at Christmas.
Great.
And Howard was in that. And then we got to know each other, and we went to each other's kind of, and we just got to know socially, and it was lovely. And throughout that time, this is my memory of it, so I might be wrong with, I don't know the dates, to be honest, but throughout that time, you were obviously in Old Vic shows and things.
Yeah, I was jobbing actor as well.
And then you were doing the three-man shows.
We did a show, well, only one, actually. We did Around the World in 80 Days.
With Craig, our director.
Yeah.
And some other bloke.
And
you're up the feeder down, and that was you.
That's right, I was in that.
So I was aware of you, Howard, the life of the jobbing actor, and the kind of the ups and downs and the roller coaster, because that's what I go through with my life as well, especially when you're slightly out of the world of that, like London or wherever. And I was aware you talked for a long time about the three man, and you talked about Stu.
It was about
this idea of could do this, and I don't. It wasn't this obvious, but I remember times when I'd be saying, "You should do it. You should do that. The two. You should do something." And it was an idea that seemed to have been in your mind for a long, long time. Yes, so I don't know where the seeing Henry picture fitted in that timeline, but there was a period of time where you talked about it, and I would always go, "Do it, do it. That sounds great." And then suddenly, you told me that you were doing it.
Yeah. Well, I think we. When we did Round the World in 80 Days, of which there is a picture just behind you, Stu, of
the
costume.
Yeah, I can see it now.
The joys of podcast.
We kind of, at the time, Craig and I and another actor, we were going to put together a company. That was a sort of idea, and it never happened for various reasons.
Was it because the other actor just wasn't, you didn't have big ears enough?
So I think he was really good.
He was really good.
I mean,
really
good. Shot out.
But then he was busy, probably, wasn't he?
Well, yeah. I mean, we didn't know anything about how to set up a theatre company. I mean, the same way that we didn't when we
still
started.
Don't really.
But that, yeah. So it was definitely on my mind whether
what years would this be?
About, it was just before we started. You know, in the sort of late 2000s, you know.
So we'd known each other for 10 years easily.
Oh, easily,
And so I came along to. And hold on, which one did you do? Which one did you do? Ferment.
Henry.
That was Henry.
Yeah.
So we came along to that.
Yeah, we did the first. Well, as we've talked about hundreds of times, we did the first half of Henry as a sort of tryout. And you, I had a couple of mates that came, and you were one. Well, you were one of them. And I remember you saying. You just came up to me afterwards, and quite seriously, which is not like you. you went, "This is it. This is the thing you've got to do.
Yes.
This is, you know, this is the thing." And well, it turns out we did.
Yeah. And I've been one a fan of you guys, and I know we've worked together, and I've kind of been there. I have a privileged position to everyone listening that you let me know when there's a preview of something, and even with some shows, I remember sitting downstairs and hearing you read it for the first time, which was Adolf and Winston.
Probably was Adolf and Winston.
And I've got the privileged position of being really early in your shows, and obviously then things change when you actually it's the version you're going to perform, but. But a bit like you're saying, Stu, about the movies, I watch you as fans as well, because I just think what you do is fantastic. But I mean, that previous position where I've been able to kind of help you out and work with you. So,
well, we always really trust your opinion very early on, because you never bullshit us. You never blow smoke up our ass. It just wouldn't cross your mind to do it.
And it wouldn't help.
Really? You always tell us where the flaws are, if there are any.
Yeah.
So we know that if you say it's brilliant, it's great, that we believe you, you know. So, you know, because you would always be honest about that. And we always trust your vision as well. So if you say that bit's not quite working or something, we always go, oh God, we've got to do some of that, because, you know, Neil wouldn't make that sort of thing up.
Yeah.
But also, I sit in the theatre shop and laugh.
Nowadays,
what you said to me is you bring me in, it seems to be at a point when you're at that point in a show where you're hitting that stage where, you know, you hate your own material, because I go through that as a writer, but where you've lost, not confidence in it, but it's so familiar.
Yeah.
You've lost a bit of the road, and you need reminding of, is it working?
And and as we've said before, Craig doesn't really laugh unless we get it wrong. and also Craig is the best, absolutely the best director for Living Spit, but as we've said before, he's not, his big thing isn't words. And so for us, it's always good to get you in really late on to go, are the jokes actually funny?
Yes, the verbal jokes.
Because Craig doesn't, it's just not something he laughs at. So, I mean, he trusts us, we don't get anything from him. So, it's really handy to have you there doing that.
I really value that role I have for you. It's really great. It feels a real privilege. And then, just back to us and
Neil.
So, is that with Henry, I made the trailer with you, with my brother-in-law, Adam Kirby, or my sister-in-law's partner, Adam. We made the trailer for Henry with you, which we shot at the Old Vic restaurant.
Yeah, it was funny, wasn't it? Because normally a theatre trailer to be honest, we didn't even know what a theatre trailer was at the time. It was something that was just sort of starting. But they tend to be bits of the show, don't they? Cut together with a bit of music, so you can go, oh, right, it's that sort of show.
Yeah.
But we were like really keen not to do that.
Yes.
Because we hadn't made the show yet.
Yeah, we hadn't done it.
So we came up with an idea for a sort of standalone trailer with like a short film, basically a short comedy film with using the characters.
Like a little sketch, wasn't it?
And
it was set.
It was, and it was a sort of speed dating evening, wasn't it? Where Henry meets each of the wives in turn. They come to the table and they have like a few minutes of chat, and then, well, it was kind of like we were trying to do a kind of microcosm of their life. Yeah. Like one of them dies at the table, or the ones that die.
It was without having anything that's actually in the play. It was everything that the play is.
That was the goal. Yeah. And we made that with you.
Yeah.
And that was
which was very home done. It was me and Adam. We did the lighting and the sound and the camera and everything. And Craig was in the background.
He was.
Craig stands
up
when someone's, when you're expiring. One of your wives is expiring.
Yeah.
Out of focus in the background.
Yeah.
That was followed by Adolf and Winston. We went a bit more to town on the trailer for that.
Yeah. What was that? That was boxing, wasn't it?
Boxing ended up being boxing, and I brought Izzy, who runs the gym here in Clevedon, to advise you on boxing. And it was really good. We had a session with him, and he was talking about old style boxing. Where the prep for like old style kind of 20s and 30s boxing is you roll your arms, like kind of comedy boxing.
And we made that in my bedroom.
Two doors that way.
And a lot more stylized. I mean, whereas Henry was kind of, I suppose, what you call point and shoot, to make it look nice, but point and shoot and let you do the work. Adam Winston was a bit more about the kind of the cutting of it and the kind of stylized and big close-ups. And then the last one I did for you at that point was Elizabeth, which was shot as a pop promo.
Yes, a music video.
It was the
Virgin Shop, the Virgin Song.
Yeah. And very much inspired by a kind of like a Queen lighting.
Yes.
It was just a Bohemian Rhapsody, just the face and the light was moving around. So sometimes it was backlight, and then the big shock when suddenly you've got the makeup on was quite a lighting effect with Howard playing a guitar with a ruffle round. Playing electric guitar on a dolly and tracks to kind of weave around you, and which involved Tom Knott.
It did, we talked to Tom briefly?
Yes, we talked to him in the Frankenstein episodes.
Yes.
So listen back to those if you want to hear from Tom.
So that's a sort of potted history of our kind of time together. I don't know if now is the time to talk about a future thing that we might have on the go.
Oh, yeah, or whether, go on then, yeah.
We got a bit of time.
Would you a meeting about this?
We are.
We could have the meeting right here, right now, couldn't we?
during lockdown last year, we were a bit bored. And we did something, well, we started doing something that we've talked about for a long time.
Hard drugs.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't that.
we've always, well, basically, we've always said we'd like to kind of film a version of Henry's
we've
show.
We've had the idea for a long time. It predates the lockdown, doesn't it? But the lockdown gave us an opportunity to do it. Yeah. Sorry. Continue.
No, it's fine. So we did it, basically. Me, Neil and Stu took about, well, it's probably 6 weeks, wasn't
probably.
It?
It was two or three mornings a week for 6 weeks.
For 6 weeks. Yeah. Where we came and we filmed a version of Henry, like, basically in my house.
Set in your house, yeah.
And we're sort of, well, actually it was a year ago that we did it.
It was summer last year.
We're in post-production now.
It is the play.
Yeah.
It is the show, but it's broken into episodes, and it's actually just it's a version of the show put on. It's not literally a recording of the show in that sense, but it's a version of the show that sits side by side with the show when you tour it, with actually at least one extra song, isn't it?
Yes, at least there one.
There is a couple of two. New songs?
I think there's one.
There's definitely one new song.
Might be another.
At least there might be another. Neil's quite keen for there to be another one.
He wants another one. He always wants more songs.
And we shot it on an iPhone 12, and basically it was... how it started actually is you guys, because you'd found... I mean, since Henry, I suppose, and through all the shows you've done, and the way you wanted to do this, the film or the TV version of Henry, was you very much wanted to do it yourself. So originally, if you remember, you just asked me to come along and have a natter with you about camera angles, shots, how you present it.
Yeah.
And it became pretty clear that actually it would be impossible, because all you'd be able to do is you'd have to lock a camera off, fix it on a tripod, fix it, walk away, and it wouldn't have an energy or a feel or a tone to it.
There's two reasons for that. One is that we're always very keen to do things ourselves because it just makes it easier. Like, getting two people in a room is always easier than getting three people or four people or five people or whatever.
Mm. How about six?
No, that's the same as five.
That's the cut-off.
But also, we are massive control freaks.
Yeah.
We don't really like anybody else interfering. But actually, I mean, looking at it now, as we have been for the last year, sort of roughly editing and stuff like that, it was, I mean, you brought so much to it. You know,
Looking back, I don't think we could have done it without you.
Well, it would have been very plain. You would have literally pointed the camera at yourselves acting. And what was really lovely about doing that is, apart from the fact I had to hold the microphone at the same time, I had to hold the boom of the microphone, apart from Kirsten at one point didn't she?
Yes, she did.
Because we were running up and down the stairs. But I was responding literally to your performances, which doesn't normally happen. That it's a very pure way of filmmaking. So sometimes I was going right up when you're playing the ghost dad.
Yes,
I was right up in your face like a one. Yeah. And that doesn't normally happen in filmmaking. Everything's planned. Everything's got to be lit. This we did light it fundamentally and basically.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you see my shadow all over the place, but it's part of that homespun nature.
Yeah.
That there's a tone to this which I think really which was a response to your performances, and it feels like a proper marrying of it. And it was a lot of fun because it was experimenting with wide angles and like I say, handheld close and finding an energy to it which came very much from in the room. So that's what I think of it as, like, it happens to be that version of that show made at that period under those circumstances. So if it's a record of anything, it's a record of the making of itself rather than the show. So it sits. It doesn't mean, if you watch it, it doesn't mean you don't have to go see the show. It's a completely different beast.
Well, we're not doing the show again, so
it's the only chance you'll get.
Well, and that was sort of also a reason for doing it, because we have said that we're not doing Henry.
Are you really? Yeah. You're not doing Henry again?
Yeah, we're not going to do it again.
There is one caveat. Yeah. If somebody offers us a lot of money, mean a lot of money.
Is this like Bowie saying goodbye to Ziggy, then he's literally playing the same song again 2 years later?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I guess they offered him a lot of money, so he did it. But we would do the same.
So yeah, I mean, no, we're not going to do it again. We've done it.
So many times.
You know. Anyway, we've done a rough cut. Howard, you've done rough cuts of it, and that's going to be honed and finessed over.
So
the next
I'm going to be the voice of the audience now. When can we see and access this brilliant celluloidic masterpiece?
Couple of weeks.
Such a good question.
Couple of weeks, I reckon, we'll have it done.
That's not true.
No,
couple of weeks after we've finished it.
Well, that's when you can see it.
You know, we don't quite know what we're going to do with it, do we?
No idea.
Whether we'll it'll be released in by some miracle that, or whether we'll release it ourselves on the internet, and whether you'll have to pay for it, whether it'll be free, or
don't know.
Whether
even
we'll
talk about, do we go down to the local lovely cinema and put it on?
Who knows? But, you know, we just did it for love, really.
It will be out there at some point. Yes. And it will be available at some point, and it will be in episodes. But in theory, you could buy all the episodes or just watch or stream all the episodes. Yeah. It will be there. It's because it was done by us kind of in our spare time, it's always been put last, isn't it, I suppose, than anything else.
Yeah.
But actually, it's really fun, and it's a lot of fun. Yeah, and those the songs, the versions of the songs have always been really good. It is everything that's in the show, just with a bit of a, kind of a, something a bit more kind of intense about it, because literally the camera's in your face and things. It's fine, and your acting levels are slightly different, obviously.
Well, there we go.
There we go.
We'll look forward to that. Yeah. Watch this space, dear listener.
Has it got a title?
Well, at the moment it's called Henry at Home.
Henry at Home.
But it might not be called that. We don't know.
If you can think of a better... No, don't. I'm not going to offer that to you.
I have got a theory that you should
David Phillips will be on it. Like on it, yeah. Carbonic,
I've got a theory that you should do Christmas Carol as your next one. Scrooge at Home.
Yeah, I'd like that. I'd like to do that.
See how this goes, and then Scrooge at Home. Same principle, but Scrooge.
Yeah. Neil, you've been quite a staunch advocate of our version of Christmas Carol, when we ourselves... we think about doing it again and we think, no, it's not as strong as some of the other ones. But you disagree.
I disagree because I think it's... I think what you're identifying there is, I think you've said this yourselves, is it's more it's true to the novel in quite a number of ways, which you could argue has kind of taken... shaved some edges off. But in fact, when you did Swan Lake, it was the same thing. You honoured everything that Swan Lake should be, and you gave it your spin. And I think that's what you did with Christmas Carol, but perhaps it was early in your journey as well. You didn't, for me, it was lovely. There are moments when your characters, I can't quite remember the moment, to be honest. I saw it in Western Supermare, where you're dancing together, and it's so tender and lovely.
I remember that.
And I'm a massive fan of the story. I know you asked you as well. I think your version of it was really lovely, and I think any version of like the Muppets Christmas Carol, any version that's done, however wild it is, if it feels true to the source material, it's really something special. And I think that's what you have. So I don't mind hearing you say that.
Ali, our producer's always on us to bring it back.
So maybe we
should revisit that in a couple of years. I suppose since we did the Nativity, we thought, oh, that's the strong Christmas show. We should get that one out again.
And I think it's difficult for us because some shows are more fun to do as a performer. And I know that, well, from my point of view, I think early on we got kind of, not stuck, but we got this idea that I was the sort of kind of serious, like slightly boring one. And Stu was the one that did the funny, which has changed now completely. You know, and we both have a go at both of those things. And I think for me, you know, Christmas Carol isn't as much fun to do because I'm playing Scrooge, which is, even though it's the kind of so-called lead role, it's actually much less fun to do.
But it's a really lovely version of that book. And of that story, and there's an audience for it, and that's why I think it's like it's not. I don't think it's an outlier in in your living spit over, as it were. But it's just one that, like Swan Lake, it's one that has a certain set of rules it follows, which come from the book. Yeah. It's really lovely.
Okay, well, we could chat for ages, can't we?
Anything else? Anything else?
I'm sure some more will come out of the question. So let's go to some, shall we?
Questions from the audience.
Another audience questions.
Now that is the jingle for that. We do have a jingle for that. I'll kick off.
Okay, you kick off.
Pip Naylor. Hi, Pip.
Hi, Pip.
He's again a long time fan of the show and an excellent contributor. So hi, Pip, and thanks. He says, now this is a good question.
Yeah.
If each of you were going to remake a big holiday, a big Hollywood movie. It would be love a holiday, wouldn't it? If each of us were going to remake a big Hollywood movie in Clevedon, what would it be and why? Wow.
Now, this is the point where it would have been handy to have read this before.
Yes.
Have you thought about
it? No, but I've just thought one off the top of my head.
Life of Pi with an E.
Right. Just so a pie on a boat.
Oh,
in the
go pitch it to us. Pitch it to us.
Oh, my God. Eating lots of pies. A pie within it. Life of Pie. Yeah. So it's about people in Clevedon who go to Greg's and all the other and Parsons Bakery and eat lots of pie.
Wow.
So it's a reinterpretation rather than even a remake.
Would we use the Marine Lake for
absolutely
for a boat?
Yeah. No. No need for green screen or visual effects. Then
just do it in the Marine Lake.
And someone's got a cat.
Yeah,
that'll do.
That's true.
As the tiger. It was just a pun, really, on pie.
I think everybody eats.
Yeah. Or, you know, the branch of Pullins is overrun by an actual pie that's come alive. And walks down Hill Road strutting its stuff and causes mayhem with obvious comedic results.
And he's very sarcastic, so he's cross-necked and he's a bit short.
Short. Yeah, I like it. Bit flaky. Doesn't turn up on time. You know, makes plans but doesn't go through with them.
Doesn't sound like a big Hollywood movie though anymore, does it? It sounds a bit small.
It is a little bit, a little bit, but it's just getting there. I think I'd like to see something like Independence Day, like aliens descend and the place they choose to go is Clevedon.
Yeah. Right,
because it's always like the film crews,
it's the thing, isn't it?
They descend on Clevedon
because aliens always go for like American, huge big American states, don't they? And they always go for the president. But you know, what if they landed?
Yeah, exactly. How do they know that?
Yeah,
how do they know that they should go to the one? You know, they always end up in America.
Yeah,
you know, like it'd be much better if they ended up in sort of Kidderminster or something, wouldn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, or Clevedon. Maybe they landed in, you know, Liam Fox's garden, and he can, you know, because it's the president. I'm trying to think of the equivalent.
Yes.
Well, he's not really the president of Clevedon, but you know, he's got some stuff to do with North South.
It'd be a town council, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Clevedon Town Council, if you like that. Hover over it.
That would be nice.
And it'd blow it up.
Yeah.
Some would say.
So that's what I'd go for. What about you, Howard?
Never Let Me Go.
Right.
Which was filmed in Clevedon. But I would cast me in it, the Keira Knightley role.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
They're doing a TV version of that.
Are they?
Yes.
It's a really good story. It's a brilliant story.
Never seen it, no. I knew it was filmed in Clevedon, but I've never seen it.
It's
much like I've never seen the One Direction video that's also filmed on the pier.
Yes.
Never seen it.
Based on an Australian video.
Is it?
Yes, based on an Australian video of the same process of the fact they jump into freeze frames of themselves.
Wow.
It was a process that had already been done.
I didn't know they based music videos on other
it was definitely based on another piece of work.
Right.
I think it wasn't
the world's
video.
Gone mad.
It has, isn't it?
Well, they do say there are only 7 stories in the world.
Yes.
There is retail.
Yeah, true.
Seven
and
stories.
We've managed to get 17 shows out of that, so it's worked for us.
And there's only so many notes in an octave and on a keyboard.
Yeah, that's
all
true.
All the tunes that have been done.
So... Yeah. Okay, well, I think we've answered that. Thanks, Pip, for that excellent question.
David Phillips.
Hi, David.
Hi, David. Now, much as we appreciate the contributions of both Pip Naylor and David Phillips, and please don't stop, can we have some from other people? Because it does look like it's a sort of like setup, doesn't
Love
it?
Best.
David Phillips and Pip Naylor.
Yeah.
Anyway, David Phillips says, not long till you're back with us lovely folk. Folk of Sturminster with Elizabeth. Elizabeth. Now, what you need
again,
is
again, he hasn't put any punctuation.
A full stop there. Saw somewhere you're going to do Adolf and Winston. Is that coming to us as well?
It's a good question.
It is a very good question. I've no idea.
We are doing Adolf and Winston in the autumn of this year, 2022. And there's every chance we're going to Sturminster.
It's unusual that we don't go to Sturminster.
It'd be weird if we didn't, wouldn't it? Yeah. So I'm sure we will be there, David. Keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah.
I love that show.
One of your favourite ones, isn't it?
It's slightly misleading to call it this. I always call it ferocious, and what I mean by that, it's when you did a show that a bit like the way Nativity is, you launch in and it's just full on, and it has got those little moments of pause and the pathos, but there's this pace to it which just throws you through it. It's fantastic. It's I'm so glad you're bringing it back.
Oh well, I'm really looking forward to doing it.
I'm really
thinking about it a lot.
Yeah,
and trying
too.
To remember some of the songs and thinking.
I remember it's quite hard work for me again.
It is. You lost your voice a little bit.
I did, because it's
runs,
a really really heavy sing, although my voice has been much more robust than
that's
it was
true.
Then because I lost my voice when we did Elizabeth the first time as
that's
well
true,
and I haven't
yeah.
this time.
No, that's true. Frankenstein was a killer though for you, wasn't
I
it?
I wonder. Yeah, it was a bit, although actually I did lose it once, didn't I?
You
we
did,
had to cancel the show. Yeah, I wonder whether it's now, Stuart, because you've lost your voice a little bit during these shows.
Yeah, I have.
And I wonder whether I was going through what, when we were doing it, I was going through what you're going through now, which is having small children.
Yes.
Now, I've got an older child now. It's the same child as it was before.
Yes, but she's just a bit older. Yeah.
And I think I was going through what you were doing, which is where your child brings home a load of bugs and infections
and viral things. And
you're not getting as much sleep as you did.
Well,
So I think that's what was happening to me last time.
Right, yeah.
And that's why I was losing my voice.
Yeah, 2013, she would have been about like four or five then. That makes sense. It makes sense. So
wise and astute observation, that.
Thanks. A very wise and astute observation. So, yes, in answer to your question, David, we will be coming back, hopefully, to Sturmitz and you and I. I think almost definitely.
And if we're not, there'll be questions
there
asked.
There certainly will be questions.
I don't. So, for anyone like me who doesn't know what's at Sturmitz, is it a theatre? Is it a hall?
Is this amazing place?
Yeah.
Right? So, basically, I'd never heard of Sturmitz to Newton before we went there. But it's got this incredible art centre, which is really vibrant and has lots of stuff on. It's not a big town. It's probably smaller than Clevedon. Sturminster, but it's got this amazing, and it was built in the kind of 90s, I think, or early 2000s. This amazing art centre. It's got a 300 seater. But the thing that we always say is that we went there first time with Henry on one of those early tours, and we went in and said, you know, it's 300 seater. We were playing to kind of 50, 60 people at the time, sort of still are.
Yeah.
and we went in and said, how many have we got? You know, oh, it's full. And we were like, we went there. This was the first time we'd been there, and we had 300 people watching us.
Oh,
and it was the first, well, it's the second time actually that we felt like rock stars.
Yeah.
We went
in
and went, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
People go wild for it. And so we've been back with every show. I don't think there's a show we haven't done there.
No, I don't think so. No.
I'm trying to think.
And it's a 300 seater studio theatre. It's not
big. It's a big hall.
Right, okay. Oh, it's a proper. It's a hall, but they've got retractable seating.
Right.
Yeah. And and we, you know, there are one of our great friends in the business.
We love going there.
Yeah. And also, we always get Sharon, who runs it, always cooks really nice meals for us in a slow cooker. So we always look forward to it in that sense.
Well, you mean you arrive there for the get-in at 3 o'clock and she's got a meal for you?
Yeah, she's cooked it in a slow cooker.
Yeah.
She gives it to us about 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
She's always very apologetic about her amazing cuisine. She says, sorry, it's not much. And it's like a mountain of amazing,
gorgeous,
lovely curry with rice and stuff. Oh, my God, this is brilliant. So we'll be back there soon, David, I'm very sure. Now we've got another question here from Drew McCockin from Slevedon in North Bummerset. Never heard of it.
Drew McCockin.
Yeah, Drew McCockin. Hi, Drew. He says, hi, Neil. Big fan here.
It doesn't say that.
Well, it says bug fan, but Drew must have... I don't know if you're into the bugs, Drew. Go for it. He says, bug fan here. I've seen all your films, even the not very good ones, and I've loved them all. However, there isn't one of them that couldn't be improved, in my opinion, by the inclusion among the cast of two excellent actors I know of, who, while specialising in comedy, are versatile enough to tackle dramatic roles with ease. Why, oh why, have you never employed Dick and Dom? Thanks, Drew. It's a great question.
Yeah.
So why, Neil?
Do you know what? That is... I don't know why, because when you do come across two really talented comedy actors who also act as well,
like Dick and Dom.
Yes, absolutely. You've really got to use them.
Yeah, well, you haven't. Maybe in the next time.
I've summed up my answer, I'm not saying anymore.
Right, well, there you go, Drew. Dick and Dom, what's the space?
I would love to use Howard and Stu, you two, in the films that I do. And in fact, I believe that Henry is has the potential to be one of those, to lead to things.
Yeah.
We have actually, there's two other things we dabbled with.
Yeah.
We dabbled with an idea of doing something in the cinema, living cinema. This is before Living Quiz. That's where the Living Adjunct
and that
came
actually
from.
Got a fair way down the you know.
Yeah, which was a sort of theatre performance that also involves something on the screen as well, that somehow there's an interacting. We never quite figured it, and we always realised it'd be a bit unwieldy to take it on tour. But that idea, and then the other thing was, you wrote a Private Investigator.
That's
we did.
Hockerdy and Steel.
I still love the idea.
Noir Private Investigator.
That was very good, I think, wasn't it?
The first episode, they go and sort out a woman who's a local prostitute.
Yeah. So the idea was that there's these two private investigators who specialise, I think.
They don't really investigate. investigate. They,
no, they sort problems out, yes, don't they? They, yes. If someone's got a rather sensitive problem that they need sorting in a discreet manner, they call on Hockney and Steele, who go and sort it out and keep it all on, you know, hush hush. And I think the first episode was an aging prostitute whose name was Gladys Over.
Yeah.
Which I think I'm very proud of. And a man had died, yes, mid-coitus,
yes,
and was experiencing rigor mortis in a sensitive area, and she
knew
needed
the ball.
Yes, that's right. So we went and helped her.
Yeah.
And I remember one scene where I, as the sort of bungling sort of Steele, who was the, yeah, lesser...
The sort of assistant.
That's right.
Yeah.
I had this brilliant line pointing at his erect penis and said, "What are we going to do with that?" I always wished we could have shot that. That would have been lots of fun.
Well, who knows?
Who knows? Maybe who we could do that.
This is, I mean, on a serious point, not to answer that question from Drew McCock in or whatever,
yeah,
it is.
Drew McCock in, that's
but
right.
But
yeah,
more coming from that is the business. It's a bit... Films and TV, it's a business. It's a real hard business. I think what you guys have done in the fact that you kind of created your own vehicle to do what you do, and even doing Hockney and Steele, for instance, would it just requires a team of people. As we know, we did Henry here just with me, mm-hmm, but mm-hmm, the limitations are there.
Yeah.
And it just requires money and scale,
yeah,
and that's when it starts to...
I mean, one of these things that I realise this doing Henry at home, actually. You think about these things and you think, well, how hard can it be? You just point a camera at someone and they act. I mean, you know, it's easy. Anyone could do it on an iPhone. But actually, it requires a hell of a lot of discipline and thought and talent,
yeah,
and, you know,
yeah,
people knowing these amazing skills that having don't think of, do you? Until you're in the moment, you go, oh God, then we do need someone to do that now.
Having said that, I think often TV things are massively bloated with people.
Yeah.
I think you can. We certainly have could have done it with, let's say, five
people.
Yeah,
I mean, you definitely could shoot things on an iPhone now, because they are amazing. But, you know, having a separate sound person,
having
a separate person to sort of just wrangle things around.
Yeah.
So you do need a little team.
Yeah.
And I suppose even doing something like Hockney and Steele, you know, especially when it involves, not special effects like that, but a few little kind of,
yes,
gags and things, you need a bit of money to spend. And that's,
yeah,
and then on the bigger scale, that, you know, when you take kind of full kind of scale production films and TV, the budgets are massive,
yeah,
and in the same way that me as a writer director and you as actors, there's values we have in the industry.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, and I do look at you sometimes, and you see
vomit.
It makes me physically sick. I do look at you sometimes, and I think you do spend quite a lot of time, like, not doing what you do, talking about what you do and trying to persuade people to do it.
Coming on podcasts and talking about
and you, but luckily you like that side of things.
I'm very lucky to have made a living from it.
Yeah,
but it's and because I've chosen a life where I'm living outside of those industry norms, and I network as much as I can. A lot of networking, you know, you don't get the same access, and it is a roller coaster. My wife always said, when the boys would, if the boys had ever said, we want to do movies like Dad, she'd go, yeah, or a lawyer or an accountant.
Yeah.
Actually, then they're moving into sport as the business they want to be in, which is great. But it's that roller coaster ride. It is about riding those lull moments. And because I'm one of the lucky ones, the credits I've got still mean something. It's all about the heat you have and keeping it hot, having a bit of cooker under you. And the executives who now I talk to, a couple of films that I did, like White Noise or Keeping Mum, they saw when they were teenagers.
Right.
And so it still means something to them. And it's about having currency and value. And I really am one of the lucky ones, because I know many, many other writers and people in the business who are same, if not more talented than me, and they haven't had those moments of luck.
Yeah.
And to have made a living from this, and even in those longer moments where things aren't happening, and I'm talking to you about this film might happen, there's always something else that I'm doing. And it is that roller coaster ride, and you really have to strap in.
And the thing is, I don't think either Stu or I have got the patience to do that, to kind of worry about, you know, and that's sort of why we do what we do, is that we go, I don't want to wait for somebody else to tell me to do this. I want to just do it.
Yeah.
And I think that's, I mean, and that's why I think we've never gone into the telly thing seriously, because we haven't got the patience to kind of be frustrated coming off.
Talk on that, Neil, just run us through kind of like the process of making a film from, say it was your idea and it was your conception. So how easy is that to I mean, with us, we get an idea, we go, right, let's write a script, and we've got people to put it on. So it's quite a, there's not a lot of waiting around for something to happen. We just go, right, there's that idea, let's get it on.
Mm.
How does that work for you? Say you get an idea for a great film. Do you then approach someone and say, I've got this idea, shall I write a screenplay? Or do you just write the screenplay and shop it around? How does it work?
It's a mixture of all of that, all of the above. I mean, I have managers and agents tend to look for work for you. Managers tend to be there alongside you with all those choices, exactly what you're saying to you. So I might have an idea, and I might, two or three ideas, and I'll talk to my managers about which one right now in the current state of the industry and what they're interested in at the moment, both post-pandemic and the way theatrical cinema distribution is changing, all that, blah, 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 blah. Which of these ideas, or if I've only got one idea and say, should I devote some of my time to writing on spec, in other words, unpaid?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes my managers will go, no, they're American, and go, no, that's not going to sell. And it's up to me if I choose to do that then. So yeah, I could write a script on spec. And back in the days of white noise, it'd be a case of selling it.
Mm-hmm.
These days, it's more like you get a producer to try and raise funding for it. Studios don't just buy spec scripts like they used to. But so the next stage, if it was a script of mine, I would tell, there's about, well, up to 10 producers I kind of know well enough that I would tell them what I'm working on just to get them to kind of know it might be arriving. And then the hope is you find a producer attached who can go out and raise the funding. And then it becomes a question of who's in it. And even though there's money going everywhere on big shows for Netflix and Amazon and, you know, kind of Apple, and let alone the BBC and Channel 4 and ITV, it still comes down to who's in it. That star system, those groups of those five or six names that everyone wants. But there can also be a situation where a producer might have bought the rights to a true story, a news story, or a book, or they have an idea and they look for a writer. So it's called an OWA, Open Writing Assignment, or an ODA, Open Directing Assignment, which is, we have either got this idea, now we're looking for a writer, and I'll be pitching against other writers, sometimes in the room, more often than not, because it's LA, like we Zoom now, it would have been back then, but even pre-pandemic. And you're pitching your take, your version of their idea, in the hope that they'll hire you to write the script. Open directing assignment is when they've already developed the script with a writer and now they're looking for a director.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're pitching your directing take on that. So there's all sorts of ways. In terms of time scale, if I was to, a script that I was to write, I mean, there's one script called Plainview that I've been writing recently, which is a kind of American kind of crime thriller. And I started writing it properly during the COVID lockdown because I dug out a couple of old ideas. And it's an idea that my manager had, literally a one-line idea, back in 2012. And I'd written a kind of five-page outline of what the movie could be and then obviously got busy on something else and I just dragged this out. Can't quite remember writing it other than it's clearly was me because it's on my computer. So, and White Noise had been was written in 2002, but as an idea I'd had as a student 20 years before.
Wow.
And then the writing, it can take anything up to a year. And when you've got managers, they become your script editors. So I might write my first draft and they'll read it and go, yeah, Neil, it needs work. Great idea. And they'll be really hard. They won't send anything out to be read out in the industry until they know it's the best we can make it at that point, because they have to stand by it and kind of advocate for it.
Mm.
So you could be writing a script for a year or more. And there's projects now, and this is a project I'm attached to that I've written, which have either come from producers or my own, that I've been attached to direct for like 5-6 years. And we've had actors attached, and then the actors have had to drop out, but the funding was there until the actor dropped out. Other projects where we've got actors, we haven't got the funding. And that's when you begin to realise, and it is an industry, and actors have a value.
Mm.
And their value changes based on their currency across a year.
Yeah, I mean, which brings us back to our previous question by Drew McCocking about, you know, if you're looking for actors with value,
look no further.
That's
right, on your doorstep. Sometimes literally.
Literally on your doorstep. Sometimes you might even be in the same room with them.
Yeah,
recording podcasts.
But I don't know Dick and Dom.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. They're difficult to get hold of. Got quite a... Yeah.
I think we should probably... Let's not do the next question, mainly because he hasn't thought of one yet.
You're right. Let's move on to... And that question it provoked a rather large discussion, which was great.
Yeah.
But let's move on then. To our next...
And it, a feature. And it very much is a feature. And that, my friends, is... Stuart's Inquiry.
It's a Stuart's Inquiry.
Yes, I'm back to inquire on something.
Okay, so this is a bit of a special Stuart's inquiry.
It is, yeah.
Because normally, I'm coming quite close to the microphone to get this. Normally, Stuart's inquiry is an inquiry sent in by a listener.
Yeah.
And this week it's not that, and it's not because nobody sent one in.
Which is true.
Which
but
is actually
that's
true.
Not the reason, is it?
This week, we've got a special Stuart's inquiry from our special guest today,
yes.
Which is Clevedon's greatest living filmmaker, Neil Johnson. So, Neil, you've prepared a subject for a Stuart's inquiry. So,
yes.
Let's have it.
Well, it's a question is to look into paganism.
Yes.
In Britain, and specifically because I've encountered for the first time something called the Hal and Tau Festival in Cornwall because of my brother-in-law. And I just thought, there's a topic.
Well, yeah. So your brother-in-law's involved in the festival?
Yes, and that's in Helston. And he's a music teacher at Helston School. And they were asked to do the song. Oh, I can't want to say too much because presumably you've investigated it.
I've looked into it.
So he actually, and I watched a video the other day of him because it was just at the weekend, just gone, middle of May. He was he had a school band do the musical accompaniment to this Hal and Tau festival.
Wow!
And it just made me one think of Midsummer, the film.
Yes.
And then two of paganism in general.
Did you know that Midsummer, that film?
Yeah.
Actually filmed in Midsummer Norton.
Is that right? Yeah. That's not true, is it?
No.
Yeah.
It was filmed in Radstock.
Right. Okay, well, the Hal and Tau is a celebration of the coming of spring and is performed upon the streets of the town of Helston on the 8th of May every year. It's a moving street theatre, Neil, that appears to have its origins in the Middle Ages. The theatre consists of the Hal and Tau song, which presumably your brother-in-law was involved
yes.
in the band, accompanied by dancing and acting out the content of the verses. The costumes and the song itself represent many different historical and mythical themes. Now, this is an interesting little sort of... This goes into
is
quite
it interesting?
A nice... Well, I think it is, right? So along with the Hal and Tau, Flora Day occurs yeah. annually on the 8th of May.
Hang on.
On Flora Day, Helston hosts a thing called the Furry Dance. It's not what you're thinking, Howard. I can see what you're thinking. It's not that. The furry dances, there are four dances throughout the day, and it starts at 7 a.m. in the morning, and the ladies in the summer frocks and the gentlemen in white shirts and dark grey trousers, they are loaned neckties with the town crest on for the day.
Oh, wow.
And they get to wear these. So they do the first dance. The second dance is 9:50, and that one is for the children from the town school, and they're all dressed in white. God knows why it's 10 to 10, you know. It's not
It's very specific.
9:50. Then there's the premier dance, which follows at midday. And this one is the gentry of the county dance. And the ladies are in long ball-type gowns, topped off with hats, and the gentlemen wear the full morning dress, right? Final dance of the day begins at 5 p.m., a dance historically for the tradespeople of the town. And only Helston-born people are allowed to do these dances, by the way. And the first male and female will only lead the dance once in their lifetime.
Oh, wow.
They never use the same people. Now, to get to the slightly interesting side bit of information... In 1911,
right.
Katie Moss, a London composer visiting Helston, observed the furry dance and joined in with the dancing herself in the evening. On the train home, she wrote words and music of a song about her experience, which she called the Floral Dance. Yes, you know where I'm
Terry
going with
Wogan.
This.
Yeah.
Terry Wogan.
Terry Wogan.
Yeah. And in 1976, the Brig House and Rastrick yes. Brass Band record an arrangement of her song, made famous by their musical director, Derek Broadbent. By Christmas 1977, 500,000 copies of the record had been sold, and it was only kept from the top position in the Christmas charts by Paul McCartney's Mull of Kintyre. But in January 78, a vocal version by Terry Wogan, accompanied by the Hanwell Band, reached number 21 on the UK Singles chart. Wogan did not include the last verse in the recording, which is the climax of the story and includes some like political health stunt-ish stuff. Okay. So that is interesting, isn't it?
Do you know what?
Wow.
Up until that point, I thought
zoning out, zoning out.
this feature is dying, because I thought, you know, people listening for the kind of comedy bands, and then we got like really boring. But do you know what? You've saved it.
I do have some more information on the paganism in England. You did ask me to look at this. I won't go through each one because I have got some info, but I will just list a couple of these. So pagan festivals in England. So aside from associations with Stonehenge and New Age movements, most people would probably confess to knowing little about pagans or paganism, who they are or what they celebrate. There are 8 annual festivals spaced roughly 6 to 7 weeks apart throughout the year celebrated by pagans, and the cycle's known as the Wheel of the Year. So I'll just take you through what these are. There are Yule, which we'd know as being sort of Christmassy time, 21st of December. Right. Then you've got Imbolc, which is the first day of February.
Costco? Is that Costco? Buy it in bulk.
Yeah, buy it in bulk. Then you've got Ostara, which is the spring equinox, March, 21st of March. They all seem to fall around the 21st of the month. Then you've got Beltane.
Ah, well, that's because... You know that one? They will fall rather because solstices and equinoxes happen about the 21st
of each month.
What's Beltane? Which one?
Beltane is the traditional May Day celebration. So that's the kind of pole and all that stuff. And then you've got Midsummer, which the film we mentioned, that's a brilliant film. It's filmed in Radstock. Summer solstice. Then you've got, this one's quite difficult to pronounce, Lughanast. Look it up. But it means in Irish the gathering of lucht, which is light, I think. It also comes from the name of the Anglo-Saxon word meaning loaf mass, and it occurs at the beginning of August. Then you've got Maybon, which is the autumn equinox, some point between the 21st and 24th of September. Samhain, which of course we know as Halloween, which is a harvest festival,
right?
And that, and then you're back to Yule.
Wow!
So those are the pagan. That is the Wheel of the Year.
Yes, yes.
That is genuinely fascinating.
There you go.
Well done. Now I do need to take you to task on something.
Go on.
When we first introduced this feature, you gave yourself a specific rule.
I know I did.
Which was that you weren't allowed read it out.
Yeah.
You said what I need to do is learn it and see what I can remember.
You're right.
And you just read all that.
I did read some of that. Yeah. All of it. Yeah.
That's shocking. I feel conned.
Well, I can only apologise. but that is a Stuart's Inquiry.
It's a Stuart's Inquiry.
And there's the jingle again, just to prove that it's ended, finally. Okay, so
lovely.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I'll learn it next time.
You better.
I will. I'll have a bit more time and I'll learn it next time.
On to the next feature, and it very much is a feature.
It is. Now we've had several calls, people who are having home disasters, DIY, several. And I mean calls, they've rung on the phone as well, and I said, look, email us, because otherwise I can't learn things unless I've got them in front of me.
Yeah.
And someone did come in with a little conundrum for Handyman Howard.
Okay. We're going to play the jingle?
Yeah, let's play the jingle.
If your decorate is driving you insane, and your ball cock is just refusing to drain, he's here with advice, not for financial gain. It's Handyman Howard.
There it is. So I love that jingle.
Yeah.
It's very good.
Thanks.
Now... David Phillips, you'll be surprised
David
to know.
David Phillips?
Yeah, never heard of him. He never gets in touch. It's a strange one, this one.
Yeah.
He says, if Handyman Howard is not too busy, I have a kitchen revamp planned. Finding a fitter is proving difficult. It would be cash in hand if you're interested. So not so much of a question as will you do some work for me?
A job offer.
I mean, no, David. No. I'm busy. I'm busy making... award-winning, potentially award-winning...
Award-nominated.
Could you produce a series of videos?
No.
Just to show him...
No, I'm not going to do any of those things.
I haven't got time for that.
What worries me about that question is, though, that it would be cash in hand if you're interested, which implies that I might be interested in avoiding
tax. Some sort of tax avoidance scheme here.
And David, I'm surprised at you for suggesting such a thing.
Shame on you, David.
Shame on you. I pay my tax like everyone else.
Yeah, having said that, do keep writing in and contributing, because we really value
your input.
So well, it's more than value, we need it.
We need it. We've got literally nothing else. So, yeah, that's it.
Yeah,
just to sort of wind up, we've got
done an hour and a quarter, I think it's
quite
probably
a long episode.
Yeah.
Now, just a very, very quick question to you, Neil, because I've been meaning to ask this.
Okay.
It's been great to have you here with us today. Now, can you just run through your top three favourite films of all time?
Oh, wow.
Ooh.
And don't give it too much thought, because we are running quite a bit over.
I think I know this.
Do you know?
I know the top one.
I think I know one. I think the good, the bad, and the ugly is in there.
You're so close. Actually, it would be Once Upon a Time in the West.
Oh, would it?
That would be the, which is a Western he made after the Dollars trilogy. That would be my top all-time favourite.
Okay.
Because it's just a beautiful, beautiful film.
I've never seen that one.
Oh, it's absolutely fantastic. It's Sergio Leone, and you see it's the filmmaker of the, and I saw these when I was in my kind of between about 10, I saw Fistful of Dollars up to about 12, 13, saw Once Time in the West. Didn't like it at first because I loved the Clint Eastwood trilogy, which is a bit more action packed, and Once Upon a Time in the West is poetic and slow, and I didn't like it at first, but a year later, 14, 15, I kind of got it. It's like a slow, poetic, mournful version of the same things. Absolutely beautiful. I'm also a massive fan of The Exorcist.
Oh, that's brilliant.
I think it's
love that.
Just a fantastic film.
I agree with you.
Classic 70s movie before the kind of the big blockbusters came along, even though it was a big blockbuster. It was kind of, it comes from that early 70s sensibility.
Yes.
I love Jaws.
Yeah.
And equally love Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Hang on, we've got four
and
here.
I'm going in, and The Godfather, I really
love.
Oh,
we've got five. All right,
the
top
Deer
five
Hunter.
Have you got any film that you think is brilliant? Because all of those are like renowned as brilliant films.
Yes.
Have you got any film that you think is brilliant but hasn't been kind of recognised as such?
Bad Timing, Nicholas Rogue movie with Art Garfunkel.
Wow.
Made in about 1978, after he did The Man Who Fell to Earth. So Nicholas Rogue, his career in the 70s, he tended to make movies with pop stars. So he did Performance with, apart from the next one I'm about to mention,
I remember
Performance
that.
With Mick Jagger. He then did Don't Look Now, which is one of my favourites as well, with Donald Sutherland and Julie Christie. Man Who Fell to Earth with Bowie. Then Art Garfunkel in Bad Timing. It's this dark, obsessive love story that goes into very dark places, and he plays this obsessed psychoanalyst who actually has got he kind of grooms and gaslights a woman and takes advantage of it. And it's just Nicholas Rogue was known for telling, he fractures stories into timelines from different timelines and things that are flash forwards and flashbacks and sideways glances, and he's got that particular style. And Bad Timing's like the darkest version of that, a domestic drama done by Nicholas Rogue where the time is splintered, and it's hardly seen British film, but made in Vienna. And it's a real classic. I'd say that is a classic, underappreciated movie.
Wow,
very good.
Okay, and finally, worst film ever made.
Oh my god, Clint Eastwood's The Rookie.
Ooh.
Counts as one of my worst films.
So Clint,
Charlie Sheen.
Like,
I love Clint.
A good one, but also
honest to God, I have this rule to myself: I'll never walk out of a film. But my God, seeing that in Swindon with Emma when we were first dating, I was tempted to walk out of
the
Rookie.
I've only ever walked out of one film.
What was it?
Intersection.
I've only ever walked
Sharon
out of one
Stone
as well.
And Richard Gere.
Yes,
it was terrible.
What?
I've walked out of one.
What was it?
Cloud Atlas.
Oh, did you?
Couldn't stand it.
And that's that. You see, that's that's got Tom Hanks in it.
It has.
In
who
is pretty?
He couldn't save it for me.
No. And Hugh Grant
ridiculous.
As a cannibal.
Did he? I can't remember. Maybe I walked out before that.
Yeah,
I should have stuck around.
Because they play different characters in different timelines, don't
right,
they?
Right, yes.
Hugh
that
Grant
was, one
was
of
a cannibal
things,
in it.
That. Right.
It was bonkers, but that's very much.
Maybe
the
I need to give it another try. It was a long time ago, you know.
I try not to walk out of a film.
Yeah.
I think, you know, because any even bad films are enhanced on the big screen.
Yeah.
I mean, you see all the bad boys even bigger, but there's something about that kind of shared experience, but I try not to. But The Rookie nearly did it for me.
Okay. Well, talking about shared experience, we're heading to the end of this shared experience, which is our podcast together, and we've got a final feature. First of all, just to say thank you to you, Neil, for coming in. It's been so good to talk to you.
Yeah. Come in every week.
You come in every week. Yeah.
Just pop by.
Maybe we should have a spin-off podcast.
Yeah.
Stu and Howard talk to Neil.
Yeah. Yeah.
We can talk about anything.
Yeah. The Big Johnson. How about that? Something like that. Or Magic
show
Johnson.
Show us your Johnson.
Yeah. Show us your Johnson. Keep the ideas in. We'll get flooding in. We'll do one of those. Yeah. He won't be free, though.
No.
He's always busy.
Yeah.
No. So we come to the end of our podcast, and just to finish up, we've got what's my favourite feature. It's an audience favourite. It's your favourite. It's Howard's End.
Howard's End. He's gonna end the show for us. Howard's End.
Okay, today we've been talking to Neil Johnson, friend, contributor, and auteur. And the thing about Neil, who I have known now for 25 years, which is half my life, is that he always thinks...
He's really struggling with this one.
Always thinks of other people. Ooh. He always buys me a coffee. He always thinks of nice things to say about people. So my advice for you today would be like Neil. Be kind.
Be kind. There you have it.
Thank you, Howard.
What do you think of that?
That's that nice, was lovely. That was very moving, actually. Genuinely, that was lovely.
We always end the podcast with Howard giving us a little kind of inspirational talk.
Yeah.
And it always ends with that. Be kind.
So, mainly because I can't think of anything else.
It's his catchphrase.
That's a nice way to end. Yes. Nice way to end.
Well, indeed.
End our lives.
Yes. Well,
I've got an instruction to do.
We've got to big up your Johnson.
You've
got
to go around and do Dave's kitchen first.
You've got to go to Sturmis Newton and fit a kitchen. All right, well, thank you for listening.
Yeah, we've had a blast. It's been great fun. Thank you, Neil. We'll be back.
Don't know when.
Not next week. We'll be back at some point in the future. What we always say is we should do these more often. We never do.
We never do. But we will.
Yeah, let's.
We'll do one soon.
Well, I tell you what, let's make ourselves do one at the Minac. Like we did before.
Let's do it.
We're going to the Minac with this show, and
we'll do one there.
Maybe either at the Minac or at the campsite that we're staying at.
When are you at the Minac?
Couple of weeks time.
June 11th, 12th, 15th, middle of June. Middle of June.
We'll be back in middle of June with another podcast then.
Yes.
So thanks for listening.
Yeah, and all remains for us to say is bye.
The Living Spit Podcast.
Goodbye from
The Living Spit Podcast.
You've been listening to
The Living Spit Podcast.
It's gone away.